Good evening, and a very warm welcome to everyone for tonight's event. Hosted by LSE's European Institute and the Dahrendorf Forum, which is a project of LSE Ideas, the lecture has been made possible thanks to the support of the Konrad Adenauer Stiftung, in particularly close collaboration with its director in London, Felix Stein, who I'm proud to say is an alumnus of the LSE, where he gained a master's degree in European Studies. My name is Eric Neumeier. I am the school's pro-director of faculty development, and I will be chairing tonight's event. It is a particularly great pleasure that I can finally introduce a speaker who studied, like I did, at the University of Saarbrücken. Frau Annegret Kramp-Kachenbauer, or AKK, as she is commonly known as, was born in Völklingen in the Saar region, the German state of Saarland. As a side remark, if you ever go and visit this region of Germany, go and see the Völklinger Hütte, a former steelworks World Heritage Site. It is absolutely stunning. AKK served as the Prime Minister of the state of Saarland between 2011 and 2018. She then moved on to take a more prominent role at the federal German level, becoming first General Secretary and then later Chair of the Christian Democratic Union Party. When Ursula von der Leyen, an LSE alumna, became President of the European Commission, AKK took over as Minister for Defense. Coincidentally, Ms. Von der Leyen just last week visited the LSE and gave a speech on the future of British EU relationship that received much media attention, both here and in Germany. So it is very opportune that tonight's speech by AKK, entitled Securing Freedom in the Age of Connectivity Towards a Deeper German-British Partnership, spins further this threat of what the future of Britain will look like in a post-Brexit world, albeit with a stronger focus on the German-British partnership. Let me finish this bit of the introduction by saying that just like Ms. von der Leyen, I fell in love with this country when I first came here as a student in 1993-94, and I very much hope that the EU can be creative and flexible in its negotiations with the UK. Germany clearly has an important voice in this endeavour, a point to which you will come back in your speech. Annegret will speak for about 25 minutes, after which we will have a question and answer session. The event will be recorded and, all going well, will be made available as a podcast. Please put your phones on silent. If you wish to tweet, the hashtag is one of these. Okay. LSE Germany. Good. That's the hashtag. With no further ado, please join me in a round of welcoming applause for our guest speaker tonight.
Professor Neumeier, professors, excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, but of course, above all, dear students. It's a special day for me. It's not my first visit to London, but it is my first visit in the role of the German Minister of Defense. And I am delighted to have the opportunity to speak to you today, especially to be able to discuss with you after my lecture, because you represent the future. That's what it says here on the wall, Shape the Future, LSE 2030. And you represent the future not only of this university, you represent the future of your countries of origin, but also the future of the European idea. You're doing this because of your age. It's a biological advantage, and I can tell you it gets less every day. You're doing this because of your background from so many different countries, or because many of you will soon be working in responsible positions. You are representing the future of the European idea also because you are here at one of the most renowned academic institutions. You're here studying, researching, working, and I hope very much that during Brexit we will come to agreements that will allow many other European students to study here. This institution here is closely connected to a mindset that comes from the, or that draws on the long tradition of the Enlightenment and liberalism. And however you want to define what we call the West, what we call Europe or Britain, without the ideas of the Enlightenment and liberalism, we cannot define it. And this tradition is teaching us something. It teaches us that true freedom means neither pulling the drawbridge up or doing whatever you like. Freedom, true freedom, means openness, exchange, and engagement on the solid ground of individual responsibility. This is also true in international politics. Linking national responsibility and international cooperation is key for many of the problems that we face today. Both the problems that we face as the current political leaders, but also you, the future generation, the next generation. I will get back to that in more detail in a minute, but allow me to think a bit longer about some basic tenets. One of the most famous teachers of this university was Karl Popper, and in his life and thinking is reflected what we Europeans experienced and learned in the 20th century, or at least should have learned. His family were assimilated Austrian Jews with roots in Hungary and Silesia, and they were killed by the Nazis. Popper emigrated to New Zealand and didn't return until the end of the war, didn't return to Europe until the end of the war, here to London, actually. During this time, he wrote his most important book on political philosophy. It's called The Open Society and Its Enemies. In this book, he explored how National Socialism, communism, and every other anti-democratic ideology inevitably leads to violence and oppression. He wrote that successful societies require an open society where people respect each other's individual nature, and at the same time, everyone stands on a solid foundation of inalienable principles. Ladies and gentlemen, this fundamental belief is one that connects us today in Europe as Brits and as Germans. This belief makes us Europeans, and it touches on the key question of our time. How do we manage in our open societies? How do we manage to assert ourselves against the pressure that comes both from the outside as well as from the inside, the pressure exerted on this open society? You will all be acutely aware of the strategic situation. Liberal democracy is put under pressure by authoritarian models. This takes place in international politics by great powers like China and Russia, and also globally in different states through terror cults and organizations like the so-called Islamic State. And Islamic State, we are fighting against that in an international coalition in Iraq and in the region. And also in domestic policy of many countries, including Germany, there is massive pressure through populists from the left, from the right. They using the confusion, the uncertainty, also the dissatisfaction, sometimes legitimate dissatisfaction with the established system, they use that for their own purposes. And in order to address that, we have to make sure that we fulfill the promises of the open society. This open society must become tangible again for our populations. The promise to justice and fairness, sustainability, the promise that representative democracy serves common good and can solve problems, that it can make self-determined life easier, the promise that everyone who works hard will reap the benefits, that they can care for their families, that they can raise their children in security. An open society which fulfills such promises doesn't need to fear competition with other ideas. And how we do in this contest is up to us to a large extent. I'm very optimistic here, even though I know about the difficulties. But I also know about our strength, not just our economic or military strength, but especially the strength that grows from our diversity and our unfettered creativity. But we have to have the courage to show the strength and to act, to get going, because only if we dare the new will we be able to maintain what's time tested. Well, it sounds easy and we've heard it a lot many times, but it's still difficult to do. Like Popper, who wrote, "Only freedom can make security more secure." And I'm saying this especially as a Minister of Defense, because during a time of uncertainty and rapid, profound change, it's a return to our intellectual heritage, to our tradition of enlightenment, responsibility, and freedom. This brings us together and provides orientation. Orientation also for concrete political action. Visiting the UK today as the German Minister of Defense and as the chairperson of the Christian Democrats in Germany, then I know, Brexit or no Brexit, I am visiting friends. I feel this in all the discussions that I've had today, for example, with my, when I talked to my colleague Ben Wallace. I know and I also feel that our two countries during this time have an important role to play. Because we have a common foundation, because we are facing the same challenges, and because we are strong countries. Because others are watching us. Whether we know how to employ our strength in a good way. I don't want to beat about the bush. Brexit, I think, is really a tragedy. It harms the UK, it certainly harms Europe too, and it also harms my country, Germany, because it pulls apart what had grown together. It costs a lot of energy, and this energy could have been used better elsewhere. But even if the Brits are leaving the EU, they will always find a friend in the Germans, maybe not in football, but that's all right. Brexit is not the end of cooperation between the UK and Europe, and not the end of cooperation between the UK and Germany. No, it's the beginning of a new intensity. My predecessor, Ursula von der Leyen, last week expressed it in this way: we're old friends and there's new beginnings. So that's what it's about, to see the opportunities that can be found in this new situation and to seize them. And both our countries are called on to do that now. The Germans and Britons appreciate our countries working together. They like the matter-of-fact, the reliable, almost natural style of this special partnership. But a large part of our cooperation was structured in the bodies and established processes of the EU, and sometimes, or at the end, it was often blocked there. This cooperation is one that we need to rethink and renew now. And the details of future rules of cooperation between the EU and the UK will be difficult and will keep us busy in future, because there can be no cherry picking. And I'm quite certain that there will be some hard debates and painful compromises. Also, hard debates within the Europe or among the European states, to what extent we can accept the British requests or not. We've seen that in the past. But we'll continue to reach out. The British Prime Minister said quite aptly, we are leaving the EU, we're not leaving Europe. So I'm taking him by his word, and I hope that it's going to happen that way, because our European nations are connected by more than just by membership, by the membership of a certain institution. We are connected by common interests and shared values that translate into very concrete policies. When we talk about an open society, that means that every day, in every situation, we turn against hatred and violence, against exclusion, xenophobia and anti-Semitism. Or at least we should be turning against that every day. And I think we're pulling together here. It's not something that we are doing on our own. When we talk about our prosperity, then that means that we are going to intensify our trade and want to keep it free of tariffs and restrictions. After the USA, Germany is the most important trade partner of the UK, and that has to remain that way even without the protective roof of the European Union. Here too, we're pulling in the same direction. We don't do this on our own. When we talk about the integrity of creation, it means that we get serious on climate protection. We have to do that, and that applies particularly to Germany as a country strong in technology, as a country with a strong industry. And in terms of climate change, we are called upon to think about how we can maintain our natural resources and still be a strong but climate-friendly, or at the end even climate-neutral country. Well, it's about investing in climate-neutral technology, for example, and making sure that we use steel, the production of which doesn't emit any CO2, or only little CO2. That's what we're fighting for together, not all for our own. When we talk about shaping digitalization in a way that it enriches the lives of people and not control it, then that means that we also insist on security standards that will not allow any companies that don't take privacy seriously.
We are pulling together here too. We're working together, not on our own. And if we talk about the indivisible security of Europe, then that means that we help our allies to secure their borders. We are doing this in the Baltics, for example, by doing air policing. We cooperate closely with Great Britain here, and this is not going to change with Brexit. It means that we will not accept the annexation of Crimea and the continued aggression in the east of Ukraine, that the Russian state cannot murder people it deems unwanted on our territory without consequences. And we can only manage all this together, not on our own. And if we want to peacefully resolve conflict and would like to end the crisis in North Africa and the Middle East, then this also means that we have to keep up dialogue with Moscow. And we shape this diplomacy together. And we all bring in our special capabilities and experience. This pragmatic cooperation between our countries is time-tested. It may not always be spectacular, but, as I said, it's time-tested. Now it is up to us to keep this spirit alive and find new path together. We are setting a good example in security and defense policy. We published a joint vision statement in 2018, which is an adequate response to the Brexit referendum. In this statement, we outline our intention to cooperate even more closely and effectively in all areas of defense policy. Our servicemen and women exemplify this kind of camaraderie and cooperation every single day. British and German soldiers fight side by side for freedom and peace in many areas of conflict all around the world, in Afghanistan, Kosovo, in Mali, the Baltics, in the fight against the IS, and on the UN mission in South Sudan. And this trusted partnership is paying off, especially looking at the current situation in the Middle East. It is based on common interest. One common interest, the greatest common interest we share right now, is to fight and to end the terror of ISIL. At the moment, we're seeing an IS in this region that has lost territories, but it has not been abolished once and for all. And this is why it is important that we secure our successes. And there have been many successes, make no mistake. The tension between Iran and the US must not mean that we let up in our common fight against the IS so that the Islamic State can regain strength. And this is why it would be a good idea if the leading actors of the counter-Daesh coalition came together soon to decide on the way ahead. As I said, talked to Ben Wallace today, and we said that we would like to have these discussions around the or on the side of the next ministers' meeting in NATO or the Munich Security Conference. There are 13 framework nations here, and Germany carries a special responsibility, which we accept. We are prepared to do so because our bilateral cooperation is with Great Britain is well established. We can see that, for example, in our joint training, which pays off on operations. Hundreds of service members, British service members, are trained in Germany and vice versa. And this is also due to the stationing of British troops in Germany since the Second World War, which has had a lasting positive impact on our relations. I am pleased that we can still count on this British presence in Germany. And I'm also pleased that we will continue this shared, this joint training of our service personnel and our military leaders as well, because this is key to our cooperation. It's important to have a shared idea of the situation. And joint training and seeing the traditions, the military philosophy of the partner helps in finding this common ground. And that makes our common service easier. Today, I think you may have heard about that, I signed the agreement to host the International Invictus Games in 2022 in Germany, in Düsseldorf. We are very happy about this, and there is great support of this project in Germany. And this, too, is an example of our trusted cooperation between Germany and the UK. This is more than just a decision to host a large-scale event in the other country. The Invictus Games exemplify something that we've learned from the UK in the past years. How do we deal with service personnel that is wounded, injured on operation? We did not have that experience for quite a long time, but you are more familiar with it in Britain. And We've supported the Invictus Games Foundation right away. We've participated in the games from the beginning. And I think we've learned a lot, and this is key. We've learned to reshape our system of recovery and rehabilitation. We've improved it over the years. And it was interesting, and I saw that in my discussion with Ben Wallace, to learn from you. We talked about PTSD. And he said that even how the service members who return from operation are received in their home countries, whether they feel that they are welcomed, whether they get lasting support, is determines whether they get well or not. And we are very pleased, we are grateful to be able to share this experience with you, because we shoulder a huge responsibility. So we need to be prudent. We need to think about which operations we participate in, how we train our personnel, how we equip our personnel. How can we make sure that we do not put unnecessary risk on our personnel? And this is why cooperation on equipment is important as well, be it protective equipment or armaments. Today, we have the A400M airplane that we use for strategic airlift, and this is due to our joint investment and joint engineer skills. I visited our troops in Erbil yesterday, and it makes a difference whether you have, when you're on operations and there's an attack. And it makes a difference when these people know that there is a base in a neighboring country, in Jordan, and there's airlift capabilities, so we can get our personnel out if needed. That's a crucial asset. And the same is true for the Eurofighter. You know it as Typhoon. It matters to me that we will still be able to have these common projects in future, because the threat situation we're facing at the moment changes rapidly. It's a new situation, a hybrid situation. It has to do with a digital transformation. It takes place in cyberspace, and it's important to have and to exchange our experience here and go into the same direction. So for the future, post-Brexit, and this means that Great Britain should not be excluded categorically from EU programs because we don't have workable third state rules. We are negotiating such rules at the moment. I have to be honest, it's not always an easy discussion, not even amongst other EU states, because we don't always share the same view. But I am absolutely convinced that the UK has to be even a privileged partner in our cooperation, a privileged third state, because all these initiatives are there to make Europe stronger, and that is especially true for common security and defense policy. I know that there's always been a lot of skepticism about what we or those people are doing in Brussels. So it's an ambivalent situation. If you talk to citizens in different European states about where European cooperation makes sense, then often they say common security and defense policy and foreign policy, multinational contingents and troops, equipment projects. But of course, this is the area that this is an area that is very much in the national sovereignty, and that is why it's hard to implement this common security. And this is why this idea of a strengthened common security and defense policy is something that, you know, almost everyone can agree on, but it is really, really hard to implement. And implementation has been especially successful in the past if we worked closely together with Great Britain, because London always reminded us that policy papers and structures are not enough, but that you have to have specific military capabilities in the end and the willingness to use them if necessary. That is something that we may not be used to in Germany, at least not as much as Britain. London also always reminded us that all European nations only have one single set of forces, that we must not duplicate NATO structures in the EU. Let me be honest, this warning voice has been helpful in our EU debates, and we are going to miss it. We will need this voice within NATO because we are going to start a reflection on the future of NATO with a view to new challenges, but also with a view to discussion started by the French president, whether an independent and improved European cooperation on security and defense policy is an alternative to NATO and should be an alternative to NATO, while we, the Germans and also the British, think that we should strengthen the European pillar within NATO, our capability to act. Because we're seeing, and not only since the current U.S. administration, we're seeing that there's a political debate in the United States about the strategic action of the United States globally. Then we cannot rely on the fact that our interests are going to be considered by the United States as much as they used to be. But we also have to admit that in many areas we depend on these capabilities. And if we want to change that, we need an improved European cooperation within NATO. So I believe it is Germany's responsibility to push for EU initiatives like PESCO to create a true added value, so more military and political capability to act in Europe. And the prerequisite is that we acknowledge that strengthening the EU always means strengthening NATO too, because our transatlantic alliance is the cornerstone of the security of Europe. And NATO and a reliable transatlantic bond is indispensable for the defense of Europe, as I see it. And this is why it is so important that Germany and the UK remain steadfastly committed to NATO. For example, as framework nations, with the goal to establish operational multinational larger formations. I'm also convinced that, especially after Brexit, we will need formats beyond NATO where Germany and Britain can have an effective exchange on European security. And I believe that the E3 format of Germany, Britain and France has proven to be very successful. It was first established when we discussed the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal. And it has also proven successful when dealing with the situation in Libya. Now we have hope to have a Libya conference in Berlin this weekend as a continuation, as part of the Libya process. And that is also a result of the good cooperation between France, Britain and Germany. As I said, we developed this format when we negotiated the Iranian nuclear program, and we're using it again and again. In Libya, we used it after the Turkish invasion of Syria to find new approaches for the protection of the population and the safe and self-determined return of refugees. This format is also useful in the current situation in Iraq and with a view to how to continue the fight against Daesh. It is not about bureaucratic rules or about excluding stakeholders, but it is about pragmatically solving problems. And this is why I personally think that the E3 format will be an important link between the mentalities of the EU and NATO. So that's more than just another bureaucratic format. It embodies the firm conviction that connection makes us strong and stronger. We are all, as individual states, we're all strong, free and sovereign. And we will remain free and sovereign, but we will only be stronger if we create greater points of contact and if people with different national backgrounds work together on a common goal, like our service members do on training and operations, and like you are doing here at this university. I hope that British and Germans will pool their strength and ensure freedom and prosperity in Europe for the next generations. In the spirit of Karl Popper, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think you heard a very clear commitment to further and deep cooperation between the Great Britain and Germany, but also other European partners based on shared common interests and values. We're now going to open it up for questions. I'm going to take questions in groups of probably three. So if you put your hand up to show me that you want to ask a question, I might call you then. I'm going to go also upstairs and downstairs. We're going to start with you here, then in the back and in the back. Please wait until the microphones are there.
Hello. Thank you for a very inspiring presentation today. My question is the following. Amid economic weakness in Germany and the UK, could you see the EU being a bit more flexible in order to facilitate Brexit negotiations, making the Brexit deal possible before 2021? Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. I should say, if you could please introduce yourself very briefly. Do you want to say your name?
Yes, so my name is Athanasia Kokinogeni, and I'm an economist for Dakar Frontier.
Okay. We have a microphone in the back, please. Yes.
Ulrich Oppold, RTL, German Television. Frau Ministerin,
how was it to meet Prince Harry this afternoon?
Yeah, Bernard Casey aus Frankfurt am Main. Ich wollte fragen über...
I wanted to ask about the relationship to your friend Ben Wallace. What did you discuss together about security, connectivity and G5? Especially G5 in connection with Huawei, is it okay to use Huawei, and if yes, where? So friendship, connectivity and partnership.
Brexit negotiations, the, I guess, inevitable question about Prince Harry. If I understood correctly, you were particularly interested in Huawei and cyber security and what she spoke with her colleague today. Over to you, please.
Lassen Sie mich mit der Frage zu...
Let me start with the Huawei question. It's a challenge that we all share. We see, for example, in France, where quite a few municipalities and cities concluded contracts with Huawei, whereas others categorically excluded a corporation. So that makes handling that very difficult for the French state. It's a question of international cooperation too. The question whether you allow Huawei or not, if you connect that to what extent you exchange information, well, it could really limit international cooperation. The discussion in Germany is a very open one, a very intense discussion that we have here. The federal government's position is that we do not categorically exclude, or we shouldn't exclude companies from the start, but that we should define security standards, and whether these standards are met or can be guaranteed, that then decides whether a company is admitted to the bidding process and whether, well, they can win the bid. And of course, there's other aspects to consider too. When I talk to Ben Wallace, we are quite close in this basic or fundamental principle, closer, I think, than we are to the American president. What about Brexit, the Brexit deal? As much as I regret Brexit, it's positive that we have clarity now. We have a clear decision. And I believe that for all involved, it would be an advantage if we were able to set out the parameters for the future cooperation as soon as possible, and that we negotiate and adopt that as soon as possible. I think there are many areas where the questions are not so difficult, looking at the pre-negotiations as well. The most difficult ones are probably when it comes to trade and business, sort of business relations and that whole area. I hope very much, and I think it will be something that we'll address during our council presidency in the second half of this year. We'll do that. We look at that together with the midterm financial framework and about how we can realize, implement the Green Deal. Apart from that, we will do everything to make sure that we can come to a fast decision here. But of course, they must be safe and sound, these decisions. So they must do justice to the principle that if you have a community like the European Union, and if you leave that, then you can't maintain the status quo, accept all the benefits, but don't any longer fulfill the obligations. So we have a debate with the UK, but of course, we also have a debate among the other EU member states. And of course, Germany will be playing a decisive role in this. We want a good solution, and the faster we can get it, the better. Yeah, and meeting Prince Harry was inspiring. I can only say that with everything he said, you could tell how passionate he is about this topic, especially when it comes to how to work with veterans, how people who come back injured from operations. You could tell how important this work is for him, and the Invictus Games are really close to his heart. And therefore, it was a good 45 minutes that we spent together, and a delight, of course, for us that we were able to secure the Invictus Games for Germany in Düsseldorf 2022. Let's see if we have any questions at the top.
That's here and all the way in the back.
Lieben Dank, Friederike Metternich
von the Green Alliance. At the end of the year, there will be the most important climate conference since the Paris Agreement take place here in Glasgow. What are your hopes for the climate conference, and what would be a successful result of such a of the conference? Second question, of course, with Brexit, the EU will lose a country that contributed a lot to the reduction of emission. What will be the consequences for the EU and for Germany? Hello, Jonas Asch. I have a question about what you said regarding strengthening the European pillar in NATO. What do you think are the best concrete measures? Are those of a political nature, or could they be at the level of troops or procurement-wise?
And BBC Arabic and other stations. I come from Lebanon, where in front of my house there are about 50 Syrian refugees, mostly women and children. And in the area that I come from, the town, there are about 800. Germany, by comparison, hosted 1 million Syrian refugees. I'm sure you are aware of the position of the main players. So my question to you, how you differ with the Russian and the Iranian players in Syria, since they destroyed Syria in addition to ISIS? And what about Germany footing the bill for reconstruction? What's your own reservation or vetoes on this?
Okay, thank you very much. So we had the first question was on climate change negotiations, climate change conference, and how Brexit might affect that. The second question was about a more detailed explanation of how you see the European pillar within NATO. And the third question was about Syria and Syrian refugees. As people probably know, Lebanon took in a very large number of Syrian refugees, actually more than Germany did, and what Germany's contribution would be to resettlement and how it sees Russian and Iranian influence in Syria. Over to you, please.
With a view to the climate conference, I believe it's important that we connect this conference with the concrete questions to what extent the announcement and the expectations of the Green Deal that was made by the Commission, to what extent that is already a bit more tangible, because we know that the European level must be linked with the national concepts. What I would like to see as an outcome would be clear definition about emission trades. Currently in Germany, we have seen that, unlike the predictions, with a view to whether we reach the climate goals over the next few years, we're doing better because emission trading is taking an effect. And that is, and the climate package that we've adopted has behind, besides several individual measures, also implies the emission trading, or emission trading is important here. The European level, well, you need to look at the individual countries, what they contributed. There must not be a concept that is applied to all countries indiscriminately. In Germany and in France, we have a very different starting situation. Energy generation through coal, for example, plays no role in France, or only a small role, because they use nuclear energy a lot. And therefore, the question about where we make the cuts, where they make the cuts, has to do with traffic there, for example. But compared to Germany, France's contribution to CO2 is a little bit smaller due to the way they generate energy. In Germany, our big job is to phase out coal. We've just made an agreement about that between the Federation and the different states. It's a big responsibility because we're a highly industrialized country, and to take it out of nuclear power and out of coal both at the same time. If we achieve that, it will be a great model for the future, but it takes a lot of effort, and we need European agreements that allow a bit of national flexibility so that you can do justice to your individual situation. When it comes to the EU security and defense policy, and especially as a pillar in NATO, well, on the one hand, there's the question that our views, our interests must be better coordinated and articulated, and how we do that. For example, take Africa, Sub-Sahara, the Sahel. There are many in Germany who say, what do I care about that region? It's so far away. We don't really need to be engaged there. But if you look at the situation there, this imploding state system, there's an ever more intelligent terror organization beyond state borders. There's a Islamist terror threat, and we see that there are conflict caused by climate change, conflict between the nomadic and the settled farmers. We see poverty, we see great migration flows, and all of that takes place quite close, in quite close proximity to the European continent. And therefore, and this is my staunch belief, this is an area that we need to consider. And of course, it's more of a European than a US interest. What we see at the moment in Sub-Sahara and the Sahel, we see that there are individual interests in different countries. For example, in France, where they want mostly to fight terrorism, but we don't have a common European view. We don't have a common political response. Where do we want to get to? What are our objectives? But we need to have this political view if we decide to be engaged there. And I think there needs to be a strategic meeting of Europeans. Then the second idea is, or the second area is equipment. We spend a lot of money on equipment as Europeans, but we're still not working well together in many areas because everyone has different systems. So large scale European armaments projects are a big advantage. Also, when we think about how we address the situation in space, the threat through weapons from space, how do we respond to that together? And then the third level, and I mentioned the multinational formations, we need to have a common understanding. If we're working at the level of NATO, then we're talking about processes, about principles that have been studied and exercised for decades. When we are talking about, or when we're engaged in an international coalition, for example, OIR in Iraq, or when we're exercising at European level with multinational units, then we still have the situation that the different national partners need to reassure themselves at national level that certain processes are not trained yet. So we need to strengthen that. So we have three different dimensions in which we need to work better together on a European level. When it comes to Syria, your question there, the interest and the intention of the German side is, above all, that first of all, we see a catastrophic humanitarian situation. We've seen that for quite some time, and that has led to so many people being on the move. And we need to help to contain this catastrophic humanitarian situation. We know that we can only do that if there is a permanent political situation for Syria. At the moment, and let me put it that way, Syria, unfortunately, is a territory for very different national interests, for different coalitions who are, and this is all taking place on the back of the people in Syria. A question is, for example, what will we do in future in northern Syria? The agreement that was made between Turkey and Russia, everyone has agreed on that. That cannot be a permanent agreement. If we want to make peace in that region and ensure that people who fled to Turkey before the Assad regime, make sure that they can return, if we want that, then we need, and I think we need international engagement, the UNHCR, we need a security to ensure that people don't return and then they face exactly the same threats that they faced before. It also needs to be ensured that they return in a voluntary way and that it's not part of a resettlement program, as certain countries propose. So this is a question that has not been resolved yet. And so far, there's no political response to that. That's one of the reasons why the German Chancellor, on the fringes of the NATO summit here, she talked with Macron and Boris Johnson, also with the president. And as much as we look towards Libya and Syria, Iraq, the situation has not been resolved. There needs to be a solution. And I think that the E3 format could get engaged here and could do something about that.
There, and then over here.
Thank you. Ulrike Franke from European Council.
Ulrike Franke, European Council of Foreign Relations and London Minister. You said that you would want Great Britain to be a privileged partner for the EU in defense policy. What would that mean specifically? Ideally, with a view to the European Defense Fund, maybe, or even more specific, could you imagine that the German-French FCAS project, the fighter aircraft, could be joined with Tempest, the British process project?
Ich bin eine Mathematikstudentin am King's
College. I study math at King's College, and this is my question. There will be local elections in Germany, in Bavaria and Hamburg. And Volt Deutschland is going to be a candidate for the first time. This is a pro-European movement and party. Volt has been very successful. It was only founded 2 years ago and is already present in the European Parliament. And then we're also looking at the Greens. We have a climate crisis. So my question is the following. May it be time for the established parties to step back in their conservative attitudes and maybe make room for innovation, which only new parties can offer?
And the LSE Economic Diplomacy Commission Project Manager. Vielen Dank für eine
Thank you very much for this inspiring and also very positive, optimistic presentation. My question is the following. All over the world, there are currently some issues with economic security, weaponization of the dollar. We've written about that a while ago. Investment in key industries, that is something that affects Germany a lot. So my question is the following. Is there room for British-German cooperation in this area, and how?
I didn't get it. Apologies there. So we had a question on, what does it mean to be a privileged third party, particularly with the European Defense Fund? And then we had a curious question on the local elections and innovative new parties. If I may add one, seizing my privilege as the chair, you You once gave an interview, I believe, together with Katrin Göring-Eckardt, so that, and unless I'm mistaken, you were prime minister of a coalition with the Greens and the Liberal Democrats, mm-hmm. and I believe all your troubles in that coalition didn't come from the Green Party. Can you foresee Schwarz-Grüne Koalition, a coalition of Christian Democrat and Green Party at the federal level? Which sort of goes a little bit in that direction of mm-hmm. innovation, given we had a grand coalition for who knows how many years now.
Okay.
Over to you.
Yeah. Okay. Ich beginne mit der Frage.
Let me start with a question that you did not quite get. So I hope I get it right, but it was a question about key industries that are facing international challenges of various kind. So if there's industrial production and manufacture, there's two kinds of challenges. One with a view to carbon neutral or low carbon manufacture. What does that mean? How do we change our manufacturing production processes? And then also the issue of digital transformation. And I believe that these two questions are great challenges for one of our key industries, German key industries, namely the automotive industry, because a switch to electric mobility and also digitalization of processes. And, you know, and also what's the what creates a value in this car? Is it the communication system and electronics, or is it the more traditional engineering skills in the combustion engine? And we share many interests and we share views on these issues with our British partners, and we cooperate, or our businesses cooperate. But I believe there's room for cooperation in another area as well. If we believe, and I am firmly convinced that this is so, if we believe that if we want to deal with climate change, for example, we need a lot of creativity and technological solutions, then of course the question is, who is strong enough to come up with the solutions of the future and then offer them to the world? This is a question, of course, and it is a task for the countries that are economically strong, like Britain, like Germany. In Germany, sometimes we just don't want to discuss certain things. For example, how to provide food for the growing world population and still protect the climate. We sometimes like to draw back from these debates. And, you know, we are a prosperous country, and we became prosperous in a globalizing world, so it is our responsibility to offer part of the solution and then offer it to the other countries. And I would hope that we'll do more of that in future, in cooperation with others, for example, Great Britain. A privileged cooperation that was, or partnership, that was your question. When we talk about access to defense projects, for example, as part of the EDF, you know, we have third state rules here. And I believe that countries that are not part of the EU but NATO members are not on the same level as countries that are neither part of the EU nor NATO. There is the option in European projects to open them for third states, and I hope that will be the case for Britain. You mentioned FCAS. that runs in parallel with NGCS, which is the land combat system of the future, so the battle tank of the future. The FCAS is started as a German-French project, just like NGCS, the main ground combat system, but we want to open this project to other partners. Spain is interested in the FCAS project, and I would hope that in the end we have as many European partners as possible. You know, air defense is absolutely essential for how we deal with the threats of the future, and it would be good to have a European product and European standards that we share. And I believe we cannot achieve that without Great Britain, and this is why I will always advocate for Britain to be able to participate. Now, domestic issues. Thank you very much for this advertisement of Vault. Very well done. And this shows that, you know, this is quite a promising party. You said that established traditional parties are not able to innovate and that they are conservative structurally. And I would like to question that, because I believe that especially in an era where there's competing interests and ever more rupture within society, and it is hard to find consensus. And I believe that mainstream parties are especially important in such a situation. You could, you know, have two approaches. One would be we have very many small fractious groups. We have a movement like En Marche in France that is centered around a leader. But what happens when that leader fails, or if that leader fails? Or, you know, you can say we will have these very many special small groups with their very particular interests. And then you have to have coalition negotiations. What these mainstream parties do is that they integrate different positions. That's not always easy with the centrifugal forces we have in society. And I can say that I'm the chair of such a party. But we offer room for discussion, for consensus. This is where we find consensus and acceptable compromise or acceptable majority decision. Just one example, we had a great debate and a big debate in our parliament on organ donors, organ donation, and, you know, people are divided 50-50. But what we've done over the last year is that we really had a big debate here. We used data, we used facts, we had an established process to discuss the issue, structured process, and now the decision, you know, is an acceptable one. And I am seeing that attitudes towards local policy are changing. I grew up in a different time, and I can see that now there are more groups, smaller groups, but also today's a time where many people are willing to give their time, to commit and in such a time, something that is well established and will last is an asset. We enjoy the competition with smaller parties. You know, some of them will remain, some will not. That is the decision of the voters. But one thing is true for local municipal policy. local policy is made around very specific local issues or regional issues. And the federal level doesn't really affect the municipal level. It is about what's happening on the ground. It is also about individual politicians and their personalities. So I am very, very interested in and I'm looking forward to see the result of the municipal elections in Bavaria and Hamburg. You know, the colleagues in Hamburg would not say that they are a local election, but they also a state election because Hamburg is a city state. I have an event in Hamburg tomorrow, and if I don't say this, they won't be happy with me tomorrow. A coalition of the CDU and the Green Party. In general, I can say that any party that shares our democratic consensus on open society values, social market economy, all the parties that share this consensus are potential partners, and we have to be able to discuss with them, and we have to be able to potentially form a coalition that exclude the left party and the AfD party, the right-wing party, but it includes the Green Party. We have black and green or green and black coalitions in several federal states, and there are different kinds of coalition, for example, with a Liberal Party as well, or the Social Democrats and the Greens. We still have very different opinions on many issues. And so you have to see at what our fundamental values are at as parties. And you have to see whether you believe that you will be able to define a shared project for 5 years or longer, and whether you will be able to say, this is our shared goal and we all want to work on that. And if you manage to be specific here, then you may be able to overcome your different viewpoints. You know, we had this, what we call a Jamaica coalition in the Saarland, a Green Party, CDU and the Liberal Party. And this was the first time where Green, and that's what's the joke that I make, that Green, this was the first time that a Green Party politician met someone from the CDU, and it was actually to our mutual benefit.
Germany, they sort of associate with particular colors, or when she speaks about a Jamaica coalition, that's a black, yellow and green, which are the three parties, and it's quite a German sort of thing to the Jamaica coalition or the Kenya coalition, just sort of for the benefit of those who are less familiar.
Ich hoffe, dass das Parteiensystem nicht noch.
I hope that that we won't have many, many more parties, because then we won't have enough national flags for our coalitions.
Intelligence unit. Just to stick with things that are established in German politics for a while, would you mind commenting briefly on Germany running a historic surplus at a time when there are some warning lights on the dashboard for recession, even if they're no longer kind of bleeping and flashing?
Guten Tag, Frau Ministerin. Vielen Dank für Ihre hier oben. Ja. Vielen Dank für Ihre.
Thank you very much. I'm a student at this university. My question is this. In the past years, there have been more and more reports on manipulation of elections, or at least a change of the rules in Britain, in the US. Does that worry you? As the chair of the CDU and member of the government. How concerned are you about countries like Russia using technologies to influence elections, and that they might do that in Germany, and that could have an impact on the stability of your country?
A quick question. Would you like to comment on or perhaps condemn the moves that President Putin has made in the last few days on the Russian constitution?
Okay, so we had one question about German export services surplus, which is relatively large to GDP. We had a question on manipulation of elections and whether you're concerned about something like this happening in Germany. And then we had a question on Putin and his move to change the constitution of Russia. Maybe to explain, I think he moved. It's a bit unclear, but it seems to be sort of a move so he could stay in power forever, essentially. So please.
Zur ersten Frage, wir haben ja.
On the first question, we have two surpluses. There's an export surplus, and then with the view to the budget, we have a budget surplus. We are very strong on exports, and that has been criticized time and again. People have said that we should not have such a surplus. I never quite got, you know, what would be the benefit of us being weaker here. You know, because we also have this, you know, it's a term we use as a locomotive function, that so that we pull others. So what would be the benefit of us being weaker? Then there's this budget surplus that's being discussed at the moment. This proves that you can spend your money wisely. Wolfgang Schäuble was Minister for Finance for quite a while, and he's from Baden-Württemberg, which is renowned for its austerity. And, you know, you can spend money prudently and still do well. We are discussing at the moment in Germany that we have to catch up in terms of infrastructure, both analog and digital. But lack of money is not the issue in Germany at the moment. But what's the issue is that we become very, very complicated. There's so much red tape, and it's just hard to spend the money. Every government agency, federal agency, has this surplus of money because our processes are just too slow. We had a special project after reunification, when there were large-scale infrastructure projects in the former east of Germany. And right now we are discussing whether we can simplify approval procedures. But of course, that will then affect participation processes, environmental law. And it is part of our German reality that, you know, we are all favor of good things as long as they don't happen right in front of our doorstep. Germans care a lot about security and safety. So regulating something for 90% is just not enough. We want 110% of safety, and we want it all to be watertight, and we want to know who to sue if things go wrong. So that complicates our processes, and that often hinders us. If we could solve it, you know, we would have the budget to improve our infrastructure. Your question on elections and electoral campaigns. I wouldn't say that I'm worried, but I'm looking at the issue and I'm following it closely, because we are seeing that there's the option to influence voters on social media, for example. I was in the Baltics last year visiting the troops. We have armored troops in Lithuania as part of a joint mission. And when I got there, the commander on the ground told me that they had an event just a couple of days before, when there was a film and images on the internet that shows German tanks destroying the Jewish cemetery in Kaunas. This was a fake video launched by Russia. But, you know, it takes a few days to investigate such matters and to spread the information. And that is a kind of threat that we're facing today. And we have to deal with it. And that is also true for electoral campaigns. Right now, we are following closely what's happening in the US. I think the US have learned a lot since their last electoral campaign. And there's a lot of reports of attempts at manipulation and hacks that, however, are thwarted. And your question on micro-targeting and other methods, well, that also depends on your legal options as a party during an electoral campaign. And we don't have that much legal recourse in Germany. It's different from the US. So many methods, you know, wouldn't be feasible in Germany. But there is a strong exchange between the parties as well, because we know that fake news are being used. And if we're seeing a report that creates a stir, then we as parties have decided, you know, that we will talk with each other, ask the others if this is true or if it's just fake news and was it generated to create an outcry. We know today that many foreign forces and groups, radical groups, for example, in different areas, are supported by states with the goal to create instability within states. This is a clear strategy by many states, Russia, for example, and we're dealing with that politically.
I think you can certainly say that there will be a constitutional change. What it looks like in detail, well, we don't know, but we can't assume that the Russian president hasn't discovered his love for democratic processes. I agree with your assessment. My assumption today, it's all a bit unclear, but I guess it's all about finding a way, whether either formally in an office or behind the scenes, whether he can ensure in some way that he's, stays influential. So it's interesting to see what's going to happen in the next few days. We have two more questions. That's all we have time.
Walter Schäkel, ich bin politische
Ökonomist. I'm a political economist at the European Institute. I am researching in the Eurospace, and what you said initially about the reform of the European Union, most people, including myself, read this as rebuffing French proposals for reform. I think this covered what you really think needs to be done in terms of reform, if, for example, Italy had a major crisis. Do you believe there's everything there that we need, or do we need more reform? And just one comment. about the problem of larger investments in Germany. If it really is so difficult to spend money on infrastructure, how about being a bit more generous in collective bargaining, for example, when it comes to nursing staff?
Yes, please. So we'll have three questions after all.
Thank you for coming. I am Ignaz from University College London. You've talked a lot about the open society and how we should maintain it. Are you concerned with the developments happening in Poland and Hungary? And should the European Union have more mechanisms in the future of, you know, punishing member states who choose to become less liberal? And in general, just that question.
Okay, so we have a question on the future of the euro and whether we need any reform efforts there. If it's difficult to spend money on infrastructure, whether it wouldn't be good to raise salaries in the public sector, for example, in the caring of elderly. And the last question on the open society, Hungary, Poland, and what the European Union should do.
Let me start with the euro and the euro space. Indeed, the discussion kind of covered up what is being demanded. We have certain tools to cope with the crisis that we had in 2009 and 2009. So subsequently, we developed certain tools and instruments, but this is not as resilient. These are not as resilient as they should be. And I believe that this means that with a view to the question about risks related to the banking union. So the question is whether there should be further steps. Wolfgang Schäuble, our former finance minister, stands for this. The question is, when would such a development get implemented, and up to what point does the national risk need to be minimized? So the second thing I think we need when we think about a common economic zone, what about European capital? If I look at the banking landscape in Europe, I don't really see a lot that is competitive in Europe. And if one of our goals is to give unicorns and startups, so unicorns, they are companies, they decide they don't want to take any money from the US or from China because they don't like to have that influence on their boards. But these companies often fail because they don't get the assets from the fund from Germany and not from Europe either. If we want to complete our economic union, then I think we need stronger cooperation here too. So yes, we have not reached the situation yet where everything is crisis-proof. But I also want to say that, well, in all friendship to France, and I come from the German-French border, from the Saarland, so I can't be suspected of not being a Francophile. But not every suggestion from Emmanuel Macron is in the national interest of Germany. And a reasonable political discussion needs a differentiated view of that too. But of course, he's right in many of the impulses that he gives. And I hope that with the new EU Commission, there will be a new momentum in these discussions. So when it comes to open society and the developments in Poland and Hungary, from my point of view, well, what do we measure it on? So we need to think about things that have, to what extent commonly agreed principles are complied with or not. And I think there will be discussion and a decision in the parliament about starting procedures. And the European People's Party group, for example, said that they want to vote in favor of starting these procedures. Weber said in his electoral campaign, he made a proposal how in future you can be more, you can better deal with the existential infringements. I found that a very interesting mechanism that he proposed as during the electoral campaign. It sort of fizzled out a little bit, but I think maybe it would be something to pick up on again to make sure that this European Union is a community of values. It's not just a community where you can pick and choose from the programs. And it's also a community that obliges. No one has been forced to join. But if you join, then you need to take on responsibility too. And especially when it comes to the independence of the justice system or the freedom of the press, that those principles really need to be complied with. It's fundamental for the European Union. When it comes to nursing staff and their salaries, it's a justified question because with a view to the question of what the requirements for the future are in the nursing area, whether you're talking about outpatient or inpatient care, there we will need many more people in future who are prepared to work in nursing, in care, and independent of the pay, it's a very fulfilling task, but it's a very heavy job, has bad working hours, or difficult working hours, and I was talking with many people on vocational training, and for many of them, it's hard to work in an area that always ends with the death of their patient, for example. It's a huge burden that many people don't feel that they can cope with. So it's difficult to get caring staff and to get good people and have a good ratio between patients and carers. That's difficult. And we need to be aware that it's something that we should be prepared to pay for. It needs to be worth that to us. And I think there's a discrepancy. On the one hand, we say, yes, we want it. But on the other hand, we have the debate about how to finance it and how to deal with it all. That's a little bit more difficult. And that's why at the moment, the collective bargaining for the public sector, for nursing homes or for nurseries, children, I'm quite ambivalent about that because the Greens, they say we do want the good quality, the parents want it. But on the other hand, that goes along with an increase in costs that will have to be passed on to the parents. And well, from my point of view, if you ask me about the social questions that will be the biggest challenge in Germany in the next few years, I believe it will be the question about how we deal with old people, especially in the area of pensions and in the area of care. Better pay is one aspect of that, but it includes a lot more, and it will definitely take up part of the national budget. So before we thank our speaker to...
First one is, if you have one of these headsets, please, please not to coincidentally, I presume, take it with you, but leave it behind. It costs us an enormous amount of money to replace them. The second one is, please remain seated until... Annegret and I have left the room for security reasons. That just leaves me to thank you very much indeed, not only for coming to the LSE, but I think you really directly answered all questions asked and really made an effort to try and answer every question, which is not what we always get from every single speaker. So thank you very much indeed, and please join me.